is 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Welcome to Apropos of Something. We air every Saturday morning from 10 to 11, co-hosted by me, Ellen Daniels, in our Charlottesville studio, and Nancy Lawrence, coming to you from our studio in New York City. We seek out the most interesting people we can find with a passion for social justice, political activism, and the arts, and we guarantee every show will be apropos of something. As always, we are grateful for the sponsorship of the Beckham team at Keller Williams Realty. Today, we welcome back A.D. Carson, also known as the Professor of Hip Hop at the University of Virginia. Carson is an educator and award-winning artist, writer of essays, music, and poetry, and performance pieces, whose work focuses on race, literature, and history. He gained notoriety for his dissertation, a 34-track rap album, Owning My Masters, The Rhetorics of Rhymes and Revolutions. Today, we'll discuss his new work, Sleepwalking, Volume 1, a mixtape essay for summer 2017, and how those summer events formed and informed this work. And we're also speaking with Dr. Max Luna. Luna is a physician and professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He also is the creator of the Latino Health Initiative there. We'll speak about the ways the current political environment is directly affecting Latino health in this community. Is it thriving or being thwarted? We'll discuss the Latino Health Initiative's work, and we'll get his perspective on the current discussions about DACA and immigration. Check out all our past shows on the station website, 947wpvc.org. But first, the person I couldn't do it without, Nancy Lawrence. Are you there?
I am here, Ellen. I am thinking, you know, we have a sleepwalking going on all over thanks to that government shutdown, I was thinking, today.
For sure.
The first anniversary, what do you get? The moron that's running the country. And I'm just going to actually stop laughing because it's truly not funny, but it's amazing is what it is. Incredible. You know what I'm hoping?
What?
About the shutdown? What do you say when they reopen? It is under new management. That's what I say.
That would be great.
Okay, now I stop laughing because it's so serious.
Yeah.
I can't believe. I know.
At the expense of DACA recipients and CHIP recipients. You know, Republicans.
Let's use them all as pawns. I know.
It was a little, you know, I was catching up on it. Republicans apparently wanted to extend funding for a CHIP for 9 million uninsured children. Then Orange Cheeto said no to a 30-day extension. What was on the table was a 6-year extension. So a lot of people were really confused. And they could have funded CHIP a long time ago, Republicans.
Right. This never had to happen.
Yeah.
Exactly. That one didn't have to happen. The DACA thing, he broke it.
Exactly.
He broke it several months ago
in
by
September,
now.
In September, yeah.
Just like he breaks everything and then does his Lisa Bright and Dark. I'm with you. I'm against you. I'm the president of love. Give me anything. I will sign it. I will take the heat on this. And then,
right.
You know, and then he's nowhere to be found.
Someone,
you know what?
Yeah, what?
Apparently, the man can identify a lion, a rhinoceros, and a camel.
Right. He's done the best on this test.
Nuclear codes.
Right. So, and a Washington Post poll asked who's responsible for the shutdown, and no surprise, 48% think
Mexico?
Trump and the Republicans. This is yesterday.
Thank goodness.
Or today.
Thank goodness.
28% Democrat think it's Democrats, and 18% equally. So, I wanted to also talk about something I just discovered. I don't know if you've heard about it. CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. So they try to reduce influence of money in politics, and they try to help foster a government that's actually ethical and accountable. And they put out a report. I think they've done 5 annual reports. This one about Trump's time in office, they called it the least ethical first year of any presidential administration in modern history. I mean, no surprise, but I mean, these are people, you know, nonpartisan, and they spend a year tracking potential conflicts of interest, every known interaction between the Trump administration and his organization, and they found more than 500 potential conflicts of interest.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like he spent a third of his presidency visiting commercial properties, and 1.2 million at Trump properties were spent by political groups, and it goes on and on.
I think in addition to many articles in the Constitution, amendments, things I am not so proficient in that I obviously am getting more proficient in by the day, I think the next thing I'm going to be learning about is all the power hidden in the word LLC, because I know he hides, right? I know. He has all his money, launders all his money, everything's happening in all these shell, I'm going to get my business, you know, minor before Mueller is, you know, or by the time Mueller is done with his
And he
work.
Paid somebody in the news lately. Recently through that Delaware LLC.
Yeah.
Right.
Bringing the jobs. Job.
So.
With LLCs, yeah.
This weekend, to swing a little bit positive here, is the anniversary of the biggest protest in U.S. history, the Women's March. And tomorrow, there's a Power to the Polls rally in Las Vegas and marches all over the country. And the goal is to impact the 2018 elections and to get more progressive women elected and registered to vote. And this, and there's a march in Roanoke, I was going to say, today at 11 o'clock. That's near here, Nancy, about a couple hours away, from 11 to 4.
Awesome. There's one in New York as well. And I know anything you want to know about it is to be found at powerstothepolls.com.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's such a cool thing to do this a year later. You know, I know the big one in Las Vegas is tomorrow, but which is the year anniversary of the last one, actually. So, yeah.
So I also want to mention one more thing that I think is important. There's an event January 24th called Paperbacks for Prisoners. Apparently, it's really hard for inmates to get a hold of good books. It's an issue. And so January 24th from 4:30 to 6:30 here at Fry's Springs Station Restaurant, they're collecting books for inmates and their children. You can get more information on the Facebook page of Paperbacks for Prisoners.
That also is awesome. That's a great one, Ellen.
Yeah. So we have an outstanding show today, Nancy. Our first guest is A.D. Carson. Carson is a professor of hip-hop at the University of Virginia. He's an educator, an award-winning artist, writer of essays, music, and poetry, and performance pieces. His work focuses on race, literature, and history. In 2016, while at Clemson University, he received the Martin Luther King Jr. Award for Excellence in Service, where he worked with students, staff, faculty, and community members to raise awareness of the historic, entrenched racism there. He also gained notoriety for his dissertation, a 34-track rap album, Owning My Masters, The Rhetorics of Rhymes and Revolutions. We'll talk about his new album, Sleepwalking, Volume 1, a mixtape essay for summer 2017. You can follow him at AD the Great. We'll talk more about that. Welcome back to the show, AD.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate you inviting me.
Yes. So, Sleepwalking, can you talk a little bit about that? The cut, Charlottesville, Summer 17. You quote Ralph Ellison's novel, The Invisible Man. Could you talk about the inspiration for this album and that title?
Well, the way that intro starts off is actually recorded on August 12th, the morning of August 12th at McGuffey Park. I was invited to give some remarks before before all of the events of the day. There was a peace march. So I was really, part of my dissertation work had already engaged with Invisible Man, the idea that the narrator in the prologue is in this underground space. And he says, well, there's the quote that says, I remember I'm invisible and walk softly so as to not awaken the sleeping ones. Sometimes it's best not to awaken them. There are few things in the world as dangerous as sleepwalkers. I learned in time, though, that it is possible to carry on a fight against them without their realizing it. And then thinking about that in the age of, like, what folks call wokeness, which I think is really important, I still wonder if or who might be sleepwalking. And for this project, then I'm thinking about myself or inhabiting that role of the person navigating that, especially leaving graduate school and then taking on moving to a place like Charlottesville to work at a place like the University of Virginia, but then doing the kind of work that I do. And from there, it's really just a navigation of that time from literally from the day that I graduated and received my PhD through the first day of teaching at the University of Virginia.
You know, A.D., you use so many artists' material in your work. You layer a lot of quotes, sound effects, and I was just wondering, the Ralph Ellison, and you know, even using that one of his words as part of the title of your latest work. What is it about his work that drew you to showcase him at, for this project?
I think that it's just probably just invisibility. The idea that a lot of times I feel when folk are in engaging my work or engaging the stories around my work, it's a conception of what's going on rather than the material. So it might be novel to folks that I'm rapping. And rapping is not a novel thing. It's been around for a really long time. So, you know, is it novel that I'm at a university and I'm rapping? And that's been going on for a really long time as well. So what is it that's really novel? Is it something that's going on in what I'm doing, or is it something that is a reflection of what folks see or what folks want to see? And again, I'm grateful that people are interested in my work, and I'm grateful that people are engaging with my work. But something in that intro to that, or in the prologue of that book, it really resonates with me to be able to reference that, to being in that underground space and then thinking about carrying on a fight without folks realizing it, or carrying on the messages in my music, or messages that I think need to be spread without folks realizing that that's what's going on. And so the novelty of rap then becomes a vehicle to mask or to carry on this particular fight on this particular front.
And with this, I did notice you called it Volume 1. Do you have plans already for more volumes?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's always a thought. I think that it's really productive to think about this idea of, you know, so I guess like the cute answer to that is it depends on whether people wake up or whether I wake up. But in a real way, I think that lots of people engage with that novel, with Ellison's novel, because it is really powerful in the ways that we can think about it, rethink it, reimagine it. And I don't think that that's going anywhere anytime soon. So perhaps there will be a volume two immediately, or, you know, somewhere down the line. But I think that I'll continue writing in that space, because I'm still trying to get used to living here in Charlottesville and doing the job that I'm doing currently.
Do you have any favorite pieces? I know there's a Philando Castile. There's a lot of other work. Is anything stand out to you as being something that was particularly more emotional for you, or your favorite?
I don't really have a favorite. I think that some of the pieces, well, there's a piece on there called Grand Wizard that I just think that folks should listen to, because it's the, you know, especially now.
Yeah. We might play a little piece of that actually later.
Okay. Yeah. But the song Two, I think, was written right after August 12th. And the reason, to think about, you know, they said equal while they was owning people. From any spot you see hypocrisy like this is see-through. They wanted you to be cool, but not the same for me, too. For them to be the ones, then they had to be some people to be, too. Especially, you know, if we are going to engage in, you know, so-called Jeffersonian exceptionalism, I think that maybe we should pause and think about what that means. And it's just 2 minutes long, so it's like an easy piece to perform.
How does your students interact with this? And are they writing songs instead of papers?
Yes. Yeah, I think that they really dig it. I was pleasantly surprised with the kind of work that they did last semester. I had one student whose final song for the semester in the writing rap class was him documenting the time, his time in the class and his development in ideas from that day to the last day of class, to that week that he's mm-hmm. recording that song. Cool. And this is a person who'd never rapped before. And I think the name of his song was White Kid in a Rap Class. So I thought that it was pretty, I was surprised at the ways that the students really just dove in and committed to the academic and the creative, you know, intellectual exercise.
How is the class you taught in the fall, how was that? How did you set that up? How do you teach? Did you decide to teach?
Well, I taught it much like I would teach a traditional composition course, like a first year composition course, except that all of our assignments were raps. So there were, eight assignments that they had that were very specific kinds of rap. And as we were reading about the ways that these raps are composed, sort of the expectations of the genre, but then we were also listening to artists who are doing these things. And then we get into some of the things, I mean, to use the literary elements that correspond closest to what a rapper might be doing so that they could have an idea of how to do some of the things that rappers are doing. And then we had a lot of conversations about what music is being produced currently. And we just opened the space up. It was kind of like class was a cipher every day. And we would be in that space, practicing, throwing ideas out and engaging with one another around those ideas.
Well, did you have any students, I don't know, that were difficult, that were, not putting up with, not participating in ways that you wanted everyone to participate?
No, not at all. I think that they all really wanted to be there. There were some difficult ideas that came up. You know, we wrestled through some tough conversations, but that's to be expected, especially since I don't know that there are many spaces that we do make for engaging with the kinds of music that we hear on the radio or the kinds of problems that even, you know, say singing along to that music might cause whenever you do that in, you know, so-called mixed company, because, you know, those are issues that people think about. But if we aren't in spaces with people who might take offense or who might raise the question or who might help us pause to reflect on what it is that we're doing, then we're never going to consider that. And then, you know, we find, the instance of having to think about that become, you know, when it's on Snapchat and then, you know, it goes viral. And then the only thing that happens after the fact is an apology, you know, and someone saying that they never intended it to be received the way that it was or whatever else happens when those things occur.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is Apropos of Something. We're talking with A.D. Carson, professor of hip-hop at the University of Virginia. We're going to go to break, and we'll go to break with a song that we just referenced. It's called Great Wizard on Sleepwalking by A.D. Carson.
Three fine people on both sides. What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? You had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. Nobody wants to say that.
And what about that initial group that took to the streets on Friday night? The president defended some of them, too.
I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest you also had people that were very fine people.
They say, I have the most loyal people. Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? Okay? Okay?
People that were involved in a robbery. The driver looks more like one of our suspects just because of the lights and all.
Don't pull him over. Even if you caught a black man, big nose, and living in Minnesota. You got no reason to kill him, and he did what he was supposed to. He gave you respect, and you panic as if he the one that approached you. Everybody take a look up at the toll.
This is A.D. Carson's song from Sleepwalking. Can't listen to the whole thing, but I would advise you to go online to adthegreat.com, and you can download it for a price that you set yourself. I did, and you can get all these cuts. They're amazing. AD the Great is A-Y-D-E-E, thegreat.com. So AD, do you want to talk a little bit about that piece?
Yeah, also you can stream it for free, or I believe that you can also, you can download it for free. You just don't have access to listening to it wherever you want. So that's... that's the thing. Well, shout out to Dobby. That was Dobby you heard rapping in that first verse. He's a phenomenal artist from Sydney, Australia. And I was there a little while ago, and he and I met and just kind of hit it off. And we've been talking about doing a song. And so, yeah, I just think that By Design is, for me, it's an interesting track to really kind of think about the ways that, you know, the hook references being caught up in a trap, and that destroys your living. It might feel okay to you, but that's the way it was intended. And just kind of thinking about, some of the themes that are hit on in the album, such as the idea of freedom, but the ways that certain folks, myself definitely, feel a paralysis that comes along with this thing that folks are calling freedom. I mean, thinking about, for instance, you know, moving to a place like the place that I live in now, or moving to like a so-called good neighborhood, and then thinking about the things that we would consider that make that neighborhood quote unquote good, and the ways that in a lot of ways means that I must submit to whatever treatment that I get in order to maintain the goodness of that neighborhood. So say the police are coming through and they're looking for someone who looks suspicious. If I don't look like anybody in my neighborhood, then that's me. Mm-hmm. And that means that when the police come and if they harass me and my neighbors say, "Hey, we're so sorry that happened to you," my immediate response to them has to be, "No, that's the way it's intended. That's actually the way that this goes. In order to keep the so-called goodness of this neighborhood, I must submit to being profiled in this way because I am I am what is suspicious, based on the way that these things are designed." So when we're thinking about By Design, that song kind of references that specifically with Philando Castile.
Are you saying that that you have to watch how the establishment sort of tries to define you and realize that it's not real, and you have to remind yourself that not essentially to sleepwalk, that, you know, it's their narrative and you're entitled to one of your own?
Yes, but I think that it's maybe a little more complicated because there are, I mean, you know, I can always say there's no, my hoodie is not going to define me. I can say that. I don't think that my mom will be too cool with me trying to put that into practice, because there's a way that while we all know that hoodie's not going to define me, people die over hoodies. People die for wearing hoodies. So on the one hand, yes, I want to completely get rid of that and the expectation or the things that are encoded into that particular kind of engagement, that my hoodie doesn't mean that I'm about to rob somebody or that I'm inherently dangerous. But I know that the stakes are really high. There is no practice run. If someone comes up to me and believes that I am suspicious for that particular reason, there might not be a do-over, or I might not get to make that intellectual argument about the hoodie not being the thing that is bad. You know, and even if I printed it on all of my clothes, I am not dangerous. You know, that's probably not going to change the ways that people engage with my body.
Can you talk about two? Because you had mentioned that earlier.
Uh-huh.
The song.
Yeah, and that, just that song talks about, I mean, and I thought about the ways that even the word works as, you know, it works in all of the ways that we conceive the sound, like the word two. Thinking about, like, I Too Sing America, or thinking about there having to be a number one in order for two to exist, it gives meaning to one, you know, like for there to be best, mm-hmm. then there has to be something that it's better than.
Right.
And then Yeah, so the song really kind of speaks at that. In order for they wanted you to be cool, but not the same for me too. For them to be the one, then there had to be, there had to be some people to be too. In addition to, and I think about that in talking about the ways that we talk about equality. Just like, the ways that some people might even say, like, these people want more equality. What you want is more than equality, as if that's even a thing. And I think that that's a way that that is being weaponized, that, you know, the sort of in addition to, these people are people, too, that we have to say that.
From another really good track on that album. Go ahead, Nance.
You can hear me.
I can hear you.
Sorry. AD, I know, as Ellen even said in your intro, you were a recipient of the Martin Luther King Jr. Award for Excellence in Service while you were at Clemson, and I was just wondering, it was just, I think, last week, what were your thoughts seeing this president honoring Martin Luther King and Martin Luther King Day?
Did he do that?
Touche. Ellen, your question.
Oh, okay. I was going to say,
You know what? That works for me, honestly. If that's all you want to say, I totally get it. I do.
Who do you write your pieces for, and who do you hope are listening?
Well, I mean, you know, in the intro, it says, you know, this is kind of like the last thing, but still entirely different. You don't have to understand it. I still invite you to listen. Still invite you to visit, sit with me for just a minute. That's Preem on the track. I'm just writing the lyrics. I'm writing for as many people that are interested in what I might have to say, for whatever reasons they might be interested. In the same way that, I mean, I know that there are people who love hip hop, there are people who love music, and there are people who might like history or might like thinking about some of these questions. But, you know, like the audience that I'm writing for, I'm really writing this stuff to deal with what's going on myself. A lot of times I might send a track to one of my brothers or, you know, the producers that I work with, Preem, you know, shout out to Preem and Truth, or other artists that I work with, like Bad Dreams, who's on the song The Script. I'm really just kind of in a creative space of thinking with these people. You know, they're making music and thinking about the world, and I'm trying to engage in a conversation with those people, and then we put those in a space where other folks can have access to them. And for me, I'm trying to construct a narrative that might make it appealing to larger audiences, so they might figure out be considerate of what might be going on whenever that happens. So there's a very specific audience for some of the stuff, but in general, I want anybody who's interested in a take on what we have going on in the world right now that is a little different, or, you know, people who are interested in hip hop that's going to focus specifically on these kinds of things in the ways that I might engage them. That's kind of the audience.
And what's the balance, or what's your strategy of being a teacher as well as being an artist, doing, you know, you're obviously able to do both. You have this new project release. So how is that going for you? How are you figuring that out?
Yeah, I don't really see them as being that different. You know, this is the work that I do. This album is my scholarship. This is me engaging in the world of media. You know, there are all these things that I'm reading and that I'm consuming and that I'm thinking about, and I'm looking at my syllabus. I'm putting a syllabus together, and then I'm writing these songs. So I'm thinking about my writing raps class and my composing mixtapes class as I'm writing this project, Sleepwalking. And I don't really try to divvy them up and say that I have to put, you know, 73% of my time into this particular, you know, part of what's going on, and then, you know, like 13% here and, you know, 7 here. I'm really just kind of I'm doing the things that I have been doing, and that's just happening in Charlottesville now, as opposed to when I was previously in South Carolina and then before that in Illinois.
And we're very glad that you are here doing that. Thank you, A.D. Carson, professor of hip-hop at the University of Virginia. His new album, Sleepwalking, Volume 1, a mixtape essay for summer 2017, available at adthegreat.com. He He's also, you can follow him at AD the Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all having me here.
Yeah. So, Nancy, do you have a news of note?
I do, and mine still comes from the White House that is mismanaging Hurricane Maria. I always feel lately to begin with that, but that is not the news of note, although that is noteworthy. It is that the administration that, you know, has ended temporary protective status for 60,000 Haitians has now decided to prohibit the same people from applying for visas for seasonal and farm workers. Those are from the guy that said, you know, why do we need more Haitians? Take them out. They all have AIDS. This is where, you know, this is the next step. The Department of Homeland Security, plans to prohibit people from Haiti as well as Belize and Samoa from applying for these two visas, which allow businesses to bring in workers for agriculture and for non-agricultural work. And this, each of these workers that they are, you know, even monetarily, apparently they contribute like $4,000 a month to the U.S. economy. And now, you know, the government's going to eliminate these work visas, and obviously Haitians are going to come in, and they're going to come in illegally, you know, and it's going to hurt the economy. It all makes no sense except just to prove that, you know, they have a hole where their heart is, this government.
Well,
anyway,
what do you got? Just a couple of things. The FBI is looking into whether or not Russians illegally funneled money to the NRA, National Rifle Association, to support Trump. It's just like, How's Mueller doing this? I imagine a lot of red yarn in his basement somewhere. And also, related to the event that I mentioned, paperbacks for prisoners, I didn't know that it is an issue. For example, that the inmates can't get books. So inmates at the New Jersey State Prison in Trenton were barred from reading the new Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness, and the ACLU in Jersey made that discovery, and the ban was lifted. So these kinds of things are happening to prisoners. I mean, it happens to them before they're in jail, and then things happen to them while they're in jail, as we know. But I didn't know about this thing.
Right. Nor did I.
So let's talk to Max Luna. Maybe he'll be a little bit more positive than we're leaning right now. We're very lucky to have him. Dr. Max Luna is a physician and professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He's also the creator of the Latino Health Initiative. We're going to speak to him about the ways the current political environment is directly affecting Latino health. We'll talk about the initiative itself. Is it being helped to thrive, or is it being thwarted? We'll get his perspective on the current discussions on DACA and immigration. Welcome, Dr. Luna.
Thank you very much, Ellen and Nancy. Thank you for having us, particularly on the week that we're celebrating Dr. King's life.
Yes, good point. Nancy.
Yeah, sure. Before we get into the darker side, Max, what did inspire you to create the Latino Health Initiative?
Just to link it one last time to this week, as Martin Luther King said, of all forms of inequality, injustice in healthcare is the most shocking and inhumane. He had expertise in all domains of life. So I've been working for the past 15, 20 years in global health, chronic diseases, particularly in Guatemala, and trying to understand the transition of diseases in how urbanization and health and social inequity affects communities. And after having done this for a number of years, we, in taking to Guatemala at least 300 medical students and faculty, we needed to create a setting where this young future physicians and faculty can develop and apply their skills, their language and cultural humility and proficiency, apply them in the community. So we started doing some community work and identifying gaps of that Latinos have, and of no surprise, tremendous need and tremendous requests on how to enhance health literacy, how to enhance access to healthcare. And the group became a movement, and now we have at least 50 medical students and faculty members on the community delivering a series of services under the name Latino Health Initiative.
So, as you were referencing, Latinos are the largest minority group in the country, and they're the most underserved regarding access to health care and outcomes. Why is this?
Great question. It leads to a few issues that I want to mention. Latino community has the highest rate of poverty. They come from poverty and violence from their original countries, and they land here hoping to be in a better setting, but they remain the highest rate of poverty in the country. They have the highest rate of not achieving high school education in this country, and have the lowest rate of access to health care.
So we're going to go to a hard break. We'll be right back with Dr. Luna. He's a physician and professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. We'll be back right back. This is Apropos of Something, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Welcome back to Apropos of Something. We air every Saturday from 10 to 11. I'm Ellen Daniels. I'm here with my co-host, Nancy Lawrence, in New York City. We're speaking with Dr. Max Luna, physician and professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. So did you want to continue on with talking a little bit more about some of the problems and what you guys are doing about it with the health initiative, Latino Health Initiative here in Charlottesville?
Move into some specifics of what we're trying to provide to the community. And we've put together four longitudinal programs that provide biweekly access to Latinos in the community for blood pressure, cardiovascular prevention, diabetes prevention, education. We are based at Incarnation Church. And after the past 24 months, we have had 700 visits, identified 350 people that are seeking our attention. Around this practice, we created empowered a group of community health workers called promotores en español that have developed skills to provide both blood pressure screening, education in different domains in health that includes from child to maternal health, to cancer prevention, chronic diseases. We are blessed to have this 15 promotores that do this service, provide this service pro bono to their community as a way to give back as we continue to identify tremendous gaps in care for their community. And during the development of these two programs, the need for a culturally sensitive setting for in affordable care was clearly identified, of no surprise. And the Charlottesville Free Clinic, where I've been working for the past 4 years, opened the doors to a Clinica Latina, where patients of Latino background without English proficiency can come to be cared from the entrance to their exit, all with a language and cultural competency and humility. And it's been wonderful. And around these three programs, we have been excited to see energized people around us, from people from the community, health district, lay people, saying, yeah, keep on doing more, providing us some intermittent support for our efforts. So, in particularly after August 12 of last year, it's been a product of bad news, a series of good news on meeting people in the community, saying, how can we be of help? Can I deliver free food to your settings? And that has been, for the students, faculty, and the people in the community, a sign that we have their back. We have the back of these people that are in need, that have made the journey from their countries seeking to provide a more stable life to their families. And lately, we're working and we see that there's many people that are trying to have their back.
So you said you're located at the Church of Incarnation?
That's one of the settings that we are on a regular basis.
Okay. Yeah. So if people are in need of help, are they contacting you specifically, or do they are they going to Sin Barreras, or and then you're helping those organizations, or are you the face of the help?
We are the health face. We are the health group for Sin Barreras, the advisory as well as support for Sin Barreras, a wonderful organization that needs your help as well. And we have a email, which is iniciativasalud@gmail.com. But also we are at Incarnation every afternoon, every other Sunday afternoon from 2 to 5, providing access to health care, enhancing health literacy, and particularly in my area of expertise, chronic disease prevention.
And how is the Latino Health Initiative handling the current administration's view of immigrants and immigration? How has it affected everything, actually?
It's leading from bad news to good news about how many people are interested in supporting is the bad news of us on a daily basis seeing that the Latino community is with a cultural self-esteem, the concept of criminalization of the Latino community has affected people's from their self-esteem as well as from their self-sense of, am I safe in this community? Are people seeing me as a criminal? And it's amazing how data is not shared with people where, according to American Council of Immigration, out of 10 people that are incarcerated, out of 10 native-born, and this is nothing, not saying anything bad about native-born, but about, out of 10 native-born, there's one Central American incarcerated in three Latinos from other origins. And it's natural that people that come in with a difficult immigration status, they're not going to be seeking a criminal behavior to be exposed to the legal system. And it's logical to understand that people tend to be less criminally intent. Of course, they come in settings of poverty and limited resources, so there is going to be some crime, but way lower than other subgroups that have been also marginalized from society's resources. And we live in the house and home of Thomas Jefferson, where he also quoted, when injustice becomes a law, resistance becomes duty. So when the law, this concept of alienation or criminalization of undocumented workers are called illegals because their first action in this country is coming in without legal documents, they become criminalized, and one wonders if that law, in its vigorous debate that even last night, is are laws needed to change to understand the humans to support the human suffering of this community. So yes, we see in more practical terms, we know that Latinos are taking their kids less frequent to vaccination, even if the children are citizens. Women are going less frequently to prenatal care. People are going less frequently to address their acute healthcare needs because they're not sure if that's the moment that one of their family members or themselves are going to be picked up by ICE and be deported.
Mm-hmm. And has people and those that you are seeing that are showing up, are you seeing the government's policies actually affecting their physical and mental health?
It is. It is pretty dramatic to see how mental health is, and this is of no surprise to anybody, mental health is directly linked to physical health. And if you are, from a legal perspective, and also from the suffering of long-term immigration and distance from their family, depending on the level of stress of that week, your blood pressure variation, your risk of heart attacks increases. We see regularly that patients' blood pressure in even healthy people, blood pressure range, it varies depending on the level of concern about their legal status, the presence of a law enforcement looking for them.
And in terms of like the community leaders that are not white, are you also sensing they too are pulling back a little for fear they're going to get noticed or by the government, be on their radar?
I think that once you become a community leader, as I know many valuable people in the Charlottesville area, you know that your life is committed to community, and that you become a secondary role in this fight. And I don't see, to the contrary, I think the community leaders are energized to move and support the community that are Latino community that are at risk of deportation.
Are you ever?
Okay,
and,
go ahead, Alan.
No, no. If you want to piggyback, that's fine.
So I was on that upbeat. I was wondering if you could explain, describe this Compañeros training and empowerment program that is part of the initiative.
Yes, Latin America has 100-year experience with community health workers. The U.S. has 30 to 40 years experience. In the Charlottesville area, there's 10 years experience of community health workers, and they, we did a study 4 years ago that they didn't have after being trained, they lost their ability to provide the service they really wanted to give to the community because they didn't have the setting where they can do it and support, the group support that they, for them to go and do health education, help their people navigate the health system, identify people at risk of heart attacks, strokes, blood pressure screening. So what we created is this program with the health department that has put in a lot of effort into the health community health worker network. We organize regular advanced training sessions with medical students and promotores, and the medical students become partners with promotores. And after we deliver a specific skill, this is followed 2 to 4 weeks later by practicing that skill with a student with or without supervision of faculty. And then the medical student or undergrad student, some of this have been undergrad students from UVA, go with a promotor and deliver this skill, a presentation, a talk on how to prevent cervical cancer, how to prevent breast cancer, how to identify early identification of cancer or heart disease. So that is the lovely term, compañeros, partnering between students that have a passion for Latino life and promotores that have a passion for their community.
We're talking with Dr. Max Luna. Thank you so much for being here. One last question. So we've been talking about how Latinos are the largest minority group, they're the most underserved, and how policies are affecting their health quite dramatically right now. That's what you're saying. What are the ways people can help the Latino Health Initiative or other organizations here? And what do you want people to know?
The first thing that I would encourage people to think through is that Latino presence here is known to contribute to society, bring not only cultural richness, but for instance, in Virginia, Latinos contribute $250 million a year in state taxes. If the around 3 million Latinos that are likely undocumented in Virginia are, I'm sorry, 300,000. Another 300, if we legalize them, there will be another $350 million in state taxes to the economy of Virginia. So one, spread the word that Latinos are not criminals, mm-hmm. Rapists, and thieves. Two, that Latinos bring a cultural richness and contribute to the economy. And if there's any group or person that wants to contribute to the effort that we're doing, an email to iniciativasalud@gmail.com, or you can find us on the website at the School of Medicine, myself or any of our student leaders, and find us at Incarnation every other Sunday.
Church of Incarnation, mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Max Luna, for being here, and thanks, A.D. Carson, also.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Yeah, yes. Thank you.
So you know what it's time for, Nancy?
I have no idea. I'm hoping you'll remind me.
It's the palate cleanser.
I just had to go stand on my piece of shag carpet, and now I'm ready. I'm totally ready.
So, I was going to go first, but...
Oh, my goodness, please do.
I don't know. It just came over me. Betty White turned 96 on Wednesday and attributed her longevity to vodka and hot dogs.
Nice. That definitely is better than standing on shag carpet. That's amazing. Congratulations to Ms. White.
What do you got?
Okay, so I don't want to... Do you have any other details? I don't want to shortchange the woman, actually. Okay. Maybe this is a companion piece. Pantone has just released their 2018 Color of the Year. It is Ultraviolet, or Pantone 18-3838, which I'm sure Miss White... could care less about that part. Anyway, they say to help you picture it, they call it a complex celestial shade of purple veering towards the cooler end of the color spectrum.
I love that.
They go on.
I mean, I don't love that.
The vastness of the galaxy, the power of spirituality, and creative expression in all its forms, which is fairly Betty White-ish in that part. Anyway,
great.
Ultraviolet, look for it for the next 300 and whatever days left of the year.
Yes, I do love the Pantone. Any trivia with Pantone is fine by me.
And let's just hope it, pairs, speaking of pairing well with something, let's hope it pairs well with impeachment.
Yes.
How about that?
Yes, let's pair
that?
Pantone with impeachment. Thanks so much, everyone, for being here. Max Luna, Dr. Max Luna, Dr. A.D. Carson. We'll be back next week. I wanted to say that our theme music in honor of the spring weather is by Springtide out of Japan. Thank you to the Beckham team at Keller Williams Realty for their support of the show. And remember, no one has to do everything, but everyone has to do something. See you next week, and bye, Nance.
Bye, Elle.